The following podcast contains explicit language.
You're listening to Working, the podcast about what people do all day. I'm Jacob Brogan. This episode, we're returning to our ongoing series about animals with jobs. And I couldn't be more excited about our topic this week. We spoke with Wendy Rice, who's a caretaker and the Africa zookeeper at the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden. Rice has a very special charge, and that charge is the most famous hippo in the world, Fiona the hippo, who was born prematurely at the Cincinnati Zoo, was subsequently bottle raised by a team of experts and caretakers, and now is a star on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, wherever you get your animal news. In a Slate Plus segment, Wendy Rice takes us through the less famous aspect of Fiona's day-to-day life, which is the waste that she produces as a hippo. Hippos only eat grass, but they still produce a lot of, to continue to use the euphemism, waste. We talk about it. It's surprisingly compelling. If you're a member, enjoy that and other great Slate Plus extras. To start your 2-week free trial today, go to slate.com/workingplus. What is your animal's name and what does it do?
My animal is named Fiona and she's a common hippo and she lives at the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden in our Hippo Cove habitat. And she is primarily an ambassador for her species. So mm-hmm. She represents wild hippos to all of our guests and anybody who might interact with us via social media or see any of our news reports or anything like that.
I know her mostly from Twitter, but I think other people follow her on Instagram and so on. And before we dive into that, what is your name and what's your involvement with Fiona?
My name is Wendy Rice, and I'm the head keeper of the Africa department, so my department takes care of Fiona. Mm-hmm. So I'm one of 6 primary care team members who takes care of her, so for the most part, that means cleaning up after her these days, and then feeding her, and training with her, and enriching her life, and then also kind of being kind of her voice for the public, too, representing her and sharing everything we know about her to everybody who might be interested.
Yeah. So I'm sure a lot of our listeners are already familiar with Fiona's story. She's maybe the most famous hippo that has ever lived, although yeah. I haven't gone deep into the history of famous hippos. I can't think of a more famous one, though. But can you briefly tell us her story? How is it that she came to be such a beloved and renowned creature?
Sure. So Fiona's story is pretty unique in that she is, as far as we know, the only hippo to have ever been born this premature and then actually survive. And what's even more interesting is that because she was born so premature, she had to be hand-raised by our animal care team.
How premature was it?
She was at least 6 weeks premature by our best guesses.
How long do hippos normally gestate for?
It's only 8 months, shockingly enough, which is, you know, shorter than a human gestational period. Mm-hmm. And hippo babies typically come out somewhere between 75 and 100 pounds. Which is amazing. So mamas cook them pretty quickly. But Fiona, little sweet tiny Fiona, came out at roughly 29 pounds.
Wow.
And then looking back on breeding behavior that we saw and the dates that happened, our best guess is that she was at least 6 weeks premature. And we were very fortunate in that when Bibi did give birth, she was on land at the time. Most of the time, hippos give birth in the water. And I think that if Fiona's start in life had started out in the indoor pools and the water, I don't know that Fiona would even be here today for us to be having this conversation. But fortunately for us, Bibi was on land when she gave birth. And we had our care team watching on video cameras from their homes and from different observation stations overnight. So we knew as soon as she was born and we sent our team out. And we, to be perfectly honest, were not expecting her to even be alive. And She was a little fighter right from the get-go, but it was very obvious to us that she was not going to be able to stand or nurse on her own. Mm-hmm. She was just so tiny and weak, and she was losing energy and losing temperature minute by minute. So we kind of had to make this quick decision, like, all right, if this little thing is going to survive, she's going to need probably a lot of help from us. Mm-hmm. So our care team stepped in and started taking over her care. And our PR and marketing department decided that we wanted to share that story with anybody who might be interested in following. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty unique because as soon as we started reaching out to other zoos and institutions, we found out that there weren't actually any places that had actually raised a premature hippo. So yeah, we were asking around. We're like, how do we do this? And everyone was like, we have no idea. Good luck with that. So there was a lot of trial and error in figuring things out. We got a lot of good information from an orphanage in Africa, believe it or not. They had every once in a while kind of taken a hippo baby under their wing, never a premature one, but they at least had some good guidelines about how to keep their skin nice and moist and maybe what kind of formula we could consider using and things like that. So her story took off because she was born teeny tiny and she was adorable, and we just started telling her story right from the get-go. We didn't know if it was going to have a happy ending, but we loved that we had an opportunity to share with everybody all the good things that are happening in zoos. So much care went into Fiona, and it was neat to be able to share that with the public.
Yeah. Were you involved with, you said that there was a care team. Were you involved with that caretaking process at all?
Yes. Yeah. So myself and then the other core members of the team were the full-time keeper staff and then our full-time veterinary staff. Mm-hmm. And we actually have a team of nursery keepers who specialize in hand-raising neonatal animals. So them combined with, and we also had our nutrition staff as well. There were roughly 30 or so people involved in Fiona's care from the minute she was born all the way up until the point where she was well enough to kind of be reintroduced back with her parents and then start living her own regular hippo life. But yeah, I was one of the primary care team members. So yeah. I got to spend a few nights here and there with her and spend daytime with her and feed her bottles and all that fun stuff that came with it.
What was she like in those early days? Was she aware of, able to interact with the humans around her at that point? Or was she just kind of a little sleepy, cold blob?
Very early on, she was so lethargic that she didn't do a whole lot other than just kind of lay there. Our big focus right from the get-go, from the very beginning, was trying to get her to nurse, and she didn't have much of a nursing response. She just was so weak, she couldn't even suckle. Even if you were to put the nipple of the bottle into her mouth, she just kind of sat there, didn't do much of anything. So early on, we had to do quite a bit of tube feeding. So we placed the tube all the way down into her belly and just delivered fluids and formula that way. And then fortunately, as she kind of got further along and she overcame these various health hurdles, she finally got to a place where she was strong enough to like be alert and active. And she finally got up and started trying to move around her space, and she was taking bottles on her own. And then we finally got to a place where we could introduce her to water too and start putting her in pools and get in the pools with her and have fun.
I watched some of those videos. They are pretty amazing.
They're amazing. There's probably the most fun I've ever had in my life. I don't know that anything will ever top it.
So how old is she now? I mean, she's now kind of well into her young hippo life. How old is she?
She had her first birthday on January 24th, so she's a little over a year old, and she's just shy of 700 pounds now, which is just incredible to look back on like those photos from that first week and think about how we came at from 29 pounds all the way to where we are today. And developmentally, she is right where she should be.
That's great.
And it's kind of interesting. There was a hippo born at the Memphis Zoo in March named Winnie. And Winnie was born on the exact timeline that we would have hoped for Fiona to be born on. So it's nice to be able to contact that zoo and ask them, like, how's Winnie doing? Is she still nursing? Is she on solids? What's her weight gains like? So we had a hippo that could give us an idea of what Fiona should have been doing. And Fiona's great. She is right on par. After those initial health hurdles, she hit every developmental milestone that she should have in roughly the exact same time. If anything, she's a little on the hefty side. I think we may have overdone it with the bottles. Yeah, early on. We were so thrilled when she finally did start eating.
Yeah.
So we fattened her up a little bit, but she's doing great now.
At what point did she start exhibiting kind of hippo-like behaviors, the kind of activities that you would expect to see in a young hippo?
I think that the very first time that we all started feeling like, oh man, she's a real hippo now, is when we could finally get her into water. So hippos are, you know, they're primarily aquatic. I mean, they're semi-aquatic animals, but they spend two-thirds of their life in the water. And once we got her in the water and she had enough energy to kind of like start romping around and dipping her face underwater and holding her breath and everything, Those were the moments where we started to feel like, oh, she's got this. That's when we got to see instinct really kick in. Mm. And then especially when we finally got to a place where we were introducing her to the adults, so her parents, Bibi and Henry, watching her interact with them was incredible because she just instinctively knew what to do. She read their body language appropriately and she responded appropriately. If she felt threatened or if she felt like something scary was happening, she would kind of give them space, or she would do the thing that babies do, which is sit down and just act really submissive, like, I'm not a threat. Don't worry about me. So it was amazing. Like, yeah, getting her into water and getting her back with real hippos, she didn't miss a beat. And it's incredible because she spent so much time with humans early on.
She's an animal whose story we know in part because for so much of her early life, she was reliant on humans. Right. And that's part of what's charming about her, part of what's sad about her. It's part of what is wonderful about, you know, learning about the ways that she's developing. Were Bibi and Henry accepting of her? It sounds like she was able to adapt to them, but did they kind of pull her in as well into the family circle, as it were?
It was interesting. So our big focus was to introduce her to Bibi first, primarily. Bibi had actually been with other babies before it. She was born at Disney's Animal Kingdom, and she had been in a bloat with other baby hippos and kind of grew up around them. So we knew that Bibi would understand that she would have to treat Fiona in a certain way. And so we started howdying them, which means we put them in space right next door to each other so they could get nose to nose, but they still weren't quite sharing the same space. Mm-hmm. And we kind of gave them some time. And Bibi initially was like, what is that thing? Why is that still here? And still to this day, we don't know whether or not Bibi understands that Fiona is her baby, but she recognized that it was a baby and it's a hippo. And she took to her pretty easily. She was like, all right, I don't mind. That thing can pal around with me. We kind of went the same track with Henry. We started their howdy introductions and then introduced them together. And Henry was not nearly as smitten with Fiona as Bibi was, or the rest of the world, it seems. He was kind of like, what is this little thing doing here? Why is it sharing space with me?
But get Henry up. He's got to get on his own Instagram and start looking at those pictures.
Right. Yeah, but fortunately for us, when we did introduce Bibi into the picture, Bibi did a really good job of playing coach and referee. So she kind of showed Henry the ropes, like, all right, hey, this is a baby hippo. Here's how we interact with it. And she did a really good job of stepping in if Henry got a little too rough. She would kind of tell Henry, back off, be careful. You gotta be gentle. She's a baby. So, fortunately, they all ended up doing great together eventually.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about Fiona's life now. Does she have anything like a typical day? Is there sort of a regular rhythm to her diurnal experiences?
Yeah, exactly. So what's interesting about hippos is that they are nocturnal animals.
Oh, okay.
But they kind of, you know, they have a little bit of, they've adapted a bit to live in our zoo world and around our human hours. So typically, when we come in the mornings, we check on our hippos first thing, make sure that everyone looks healthy and sound, and we give them a breakfast, and then we clean up after them.
What do they eat?
Hippos in the wild eat primarily grass. Grass makes up the biggest portion of their diet. So here in the zoo world, we give them a grain that's very similar to like a horse grain, but it is nutritionally balanced for a hippo's needs. Mm-hmm. So on top of that grain, they also get lots of hay, Timothy hay, sometimes a little bit of orchard alfalfa mix, which is a little richer, but it's kind of a nice treat for them from time to time. And they love produce, so we'll give them lettuce, and they get squash and cucumbers. And then on special occasions, we'll give them sweeter things like watermelon or honeydew or cantaloupe. They, like us, seem to have a real sweet tooth. They love anything sweet, so watermelon is high up on the list. And they really seem to love pumpkin, too, also one of their favorites. So we feed them a couple of times throughout the day. And at this point in Fiona's life, Fiona is now responsible for learning some basic behaviors that she does with the keeper staff. So we focus on training with her. So she has to work a little bit more for her food than she ever did in the past.
Is there a particular time is that something that's just part of her day, or is that something that happens throughout the day, that kind of training?
As often as we can make it happen. We usually separate Fiona from Bibi to feed her anyway, because Bibi is such a hoss. She's a 3,500-pound hippo, and that's kind of large for a female. And Bibi has never felt full, as far as we can tell. She's always hungry, and she has no trouble like pushing Fiona out of the way and stealing her food. She has no shame when it comes to that. So we have to separate Fiona anyway to feed her. So once we have her separated, we start working on these behaviors. And the big goal at the end of the day is that Fiona basically basically participates in her own husbandry and care. So if she'll work cooperatively with us, like open your mouth, let us check out your teeth, make sure everything looks okay there. Another new behavior we're focusing on is teaching her, like, all right, we're gonna give you a capsule and you're gonna have to swallow it to get a treat. So this is a behavior that can be really helpful if at some point in the future, if she is ever sick or we need her to take antibiotics, she's already used to taking medicine, essentially. So we can fill those capsules with whatever medicine she needs. Right now, she's practicing with applesauce inside of her capsules. And once she eats that, then she gets a nice big chunk of watermelon, and that's her reward. Another behavior that she's learning is allowing us to touch and manipulate her tail with the hopes that we can do a voluntary blood draw someday. So if at some point, again, if we suspect that she's sick or something is not quite right, if we can get blood voluntarily from her, that will give us so much helpful information to kind of help us manage her health and make sure that we're doing everything we can to keep her happy and healthy.
You mentioned earlier that she had taken almost instinctively to Bibi, to her mother. When you're doing these kinds of trainings with a hippo to ensure that it can live happily and healthfully and well in a zoo, is there any concern that you're interfering with those natural behaviors, those kind of ingrained things that they learn to do on their own?
Yeah, that's actually a really good point and a good question. So anytime that keeper staff have to step in and hand raise a baby animal, it's not something we take lightly, and it's not something we do unless we have no other choice. Because, yeah, you can. You can absolutely affect kind of how they relate to other conspecifics. If they grow up around people, you know, there's always a concern that an animal might imprint onto people and might pick up on human behaviors and not necessarily understand how they should interact with other species of their kind. Fortunately, with Fiona, it didn't seem to make a whole lot of difference. She has very, very strong bonds with all of the people that were part of her primary care team. And she seems to kind of love us and still interact with us, and she enjoys interacting with us. But it didn't seem to affect how she interacted with the hippos. She fit right into the little bloat. She does her thing with them, and she seems happy with them as well as when we take her away to come train and work with us. So in Fiona's case, it seems like it worked out just fine. Every once in a while where you will see issues is if further down the line, if when Fiona becomes a mother herself one day, that will be really interesting to see whether or not she has all the maternal instincts. Because sometimes if a baby didn't experience maternal care from a mama hippo, sometimes there's a concern that she might not be able to deliver maternal care the way a mother hippo should.
Yeah.
But for that one, we can't really tell. I guess time will tell on whether or not Fiona ever becomes a mom herself.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at Progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
This is probably too reductive a question, but are they smart animals?
I think that's a really interesting question to ask, and I think that the answer can even kind of demonstrate just how much zookeeping has changed in like just the past decade. So if you were to ask keepers maybe 10 or 20 years ago, are hippos smart? You probably would have got kind of a mixed response of like no or a maybe, but they're stubborn. If you ask me, I think they're incredibly intelligent animals. And Fiona's mom, Bibi, is a really great example of that. We trained her to participate in a voluntary ultrasound behavior. So before Fiona was even born, we were able to capture images of Fiona in utero, which had never been done before and is amazing.
Wow.
And that's a behavior that Bibi learned. I mean, she understood, like, your role is to stand here and sit still and let us touch, and as long as you do that, we'll keep the food coming. Mm-hmm. We see so many examples of their intelligence. Fiona picks up on things so quickly. I mean, we all joke that she speaks English. Like, she fully seems to understand the English language because, well, you could ask her to do something, and she's just so cooperative and good about it. And so, yeah, it's I mean, I personally definitely think that they're intelligent animals, yeah. Mm-hmm. They're just smart in their own ways, and they can be really stubborn. So if you're not patient, if you're not willing to kind of wait and let them figure things out, you might miss it. You might miss the intelligence. Mm-hmm.
But it does sound like they're more than capable of learning behaviors, maybe even learning from each other, as it sounds like happened with Bibi and Henry in relationship to Fiona.
Yeah.
They learn how to do the job of being a hippo, which is just being a hippo, pretty well on their own. And it sounds like they learn other things as well when they need to in the institutional environment of the zoo.
From our experience, it certainly seems that way. Yeah.
Yeah. So when we've talked about the morning time and feeding and some of the kind of behavior training, but that's not the whole day. I mean, what else is she up to? Just wandering around her enclosure?
So when the weather is nice, they get to go outside. And in nice weather for us, typically we look for a real field temperature of at least 45 to 50 degrees. Mm-hmm. And then we would give them access into their outdoor habitat. They've got this nice, gorgeous pool out there that's heated to roughly 65 to 70 degrees in the colder months.
That sounds nice.
So they go out onto exhibit and they get some exercise in, and typically hippos do a lot of laying around and doing a whole lot of nothing. If they're not eating, they're conserving energy. Mm-hmm. And especially with them being nocturnal animals, that means that they sleep for the vast majority of the day. So after we kind of come in and we're catching them sort of on the very end of their day, essentially, we feed them out. And then they go out on exhibit and they take a big long nap from roughly 9 a.m. to maybe around 2 p.m., for the vast majority of that time, they are just kind of napping and crashed out and conserving energy. And then right around 2 o'clock or 3 p.m., they kind of start to wake back up and they'll get active. And you'll see Bibi and Fiona out there kind of swimming laps in the pool and playing and interacting with each other, which is great. So all that play behavior is essentially Fiona practicing skill sets that she needs to have mastered when she's an adult. Hmm. So we will see them sparring with each other, pretending to kind of fight with their mouths agape and swinging their mouths around at each other. And they'll toss water in the air and they'll do this great big porpoising behavior where they go bobbing up and their back ends come out of the water and they splash everywhere. So, I mean, their daytime job is essentially kind of be out there, be visible to our guests and just show them what hippos do and hopefully inspire people to learn more about hippos and to figure out what they can do to help conserve them in the wild.
Mm-hmm. Does she, you know, zoo animals are different in the degree to which they are aware of or willing to interact with or interested in even the public, the visitors who come to see them. On social media, at least, Fiona, very charismatic in her interactions with the camera, but that may be just an effect of the way the pictures are taken. Does she have an awareness of the people that are coming to see her? I mean, obviously she doesn't know that she's a famous hippo, I assume. but does she have an awareness of the people that are stopping by her habitat, by her enclosure?
Yeah, it certainly seems like she does. I think part of that is because, again, just because she was hand-raised and there was always somebody with her and we always had our cameras with us, our phones with us, I think she learned, like most toddlers can, that certain behaviors got a reaction out of us. So it's like anytime we would pull out our phones, our camera phones, and start filming, and she would do something outrageous, and everybody standing around would ooh and ah and make a big fuss over her. Like, she learned, like, oh, this gets attention, this gets a reaction. So she built that association, and then it translated beautifully when she finally got to go out on habitat. She would come up to the windows, and there's just hordes and hordes of people there to see her. And if she bobs up and kind of, like, does a barrel roll in the water, the whole crowd, like, erupts with cheering and laughter. And she seems to love it. She seems to enjoy it. So, yeah, she's almost always putting on a show. It seems very much like she is aware of the people on the other side of the glass, and she is at least equally entertained by them as we are with her. That's what one of the cool things that I hear about guests that come to visit her and see her in person. She lives up to the hype. Like, it's not just creative editing on our part, like showing her like, oh, her best moments online.
Yeah.
She really is kind of just that sassy, fun, energetic diva pretty much anytime she's awake and out there. So yeah, she delivers on her part of being charming and charismatic and kind of winning people over to hippos and their cause.
Were those ever behaviors that you reinforced with food or other rewards? Or was that something that, I mean, as it sounds like you're saying it was, that just sort of emerged out of her early interaction with humans in a more natural way within the kind of unnatural context in which she was raised?
It felt fairly organic. I don't think anybody was ever like pairing her doing fun, silly things with like, here's a piece of lettuce or here's a bottle. It was more just probably the reactions she got from people and the interaction that came with it. So yeah, it happened very naturally and organically, and it just happened to have like a very serendipitous side effect that it carried over and translates, and that's sort of just part of her life now. And she doesn't mind putting on a show, and she seems to enjoy it, and it works out great for our guests that come see her.
How social are hippos in the wild? How is it strange that these behaviors showed up in her?
Oh, I love this question when people ask. So hippos are unique in that you could consider them gregarious, which means you find them in groups, roughly 10 to 20 to 30, sometimes as big as a group of up to 200 hippos. So you find them in groups, but they're not necessarily social. They don't form really intense social bonds the way that primates would. The only real exception to that is a mother and a daughter. So a mother and a daughter would bond and would likely live together and stay in the same bloat throughout their lives until mama passes away at some point. So mothers and daughters do bond and hold on to those bonds. But for the most part, all the other hippos in a bloat are kind of just sharing space and bumping into each other. And they actually have a lot of like temperamental disagreements and get into spats and fights with each other. But they love to like be in contact with each other. I think there's strength in numbers, and that's one of their survival skills, is that there's a big group of us and we're all really big. So any lion who wants to come try, you can have a go at it, but you're not gonna do much. So you do find them in groups, and with mothers and daughters, you see social bonding. But outside of that, it's mostly just that they're all sharing space and they're all in this part of the river together. So yeah, the social bonding element with Fiona, in her case, she had, you know, roughly 30 surrogate moms and dads that kind of stepped in. So I think she bonded with all of us. And lucky for us, that kind of has stuck with her, and she seems to hold on to those bonds with us at least.
Yeah. Are there ever, when you think about the kind of husbandry that you've done here, the way that you all literally saved this young creature's life, are there ever concerns thinking ahead about her natural hipponess, finding ways to ensure that she still gets to be a hippo qua hippo?
I think at this point that we have stepped off enough that we are no longer at a point where we're affecting her in that regard. So one of our big concerns early on was when Fiona was gaining weight, and when she got to roughly 100 pounds or more, then it became apparent to us like, okay, not only are we not going to be able to continue this relationship with her where we share space and we swim in the pool with her, it became apparent that was not going to be super safe for the keeper staff, because even at 100 pounds, even if she wasn't deliberately trying to hurt anybody, she was like knee height, and she would just come barreling around corners and kind of crashing into us, because that's how hippos interact with each other. And two hippos can handle that, but a human is not designed to kind of spar with a baby hippo. So as soon as we got to that point in her development and her growth, our big focus became shifting her back in with the hippos. So not only physically is she able to share space with those other hippos, we wanted her to recognize that, like, socially as well. All right, if you need support, if you need somebody to play with, to pal around with, that's going to be BB and Henry from now on. And we took that transition very seriously. And our big goal was, we never wanted her to hit some point where she wasn't ready to go back with the adults, but we couldn't share space with her. We didn't ever want her to be alone at any point during her journey, and especially that transition. And we got really fortunate. All of the timing kind of panned out beautifully. And it's roughly around the time that we were ready to step out completely and stop sharing space with her, she was also ready to go in and start sharing space with the adults pretty much around the clock, 24 hours a day. And I think because that happened, fortunately, as quickly as it did, you know, in under 6 months, she was already back with both of the adults. Luckily for us, she was like doing well enough. And I think she started transitioning to, okay, I'm not I'm not a strange-looking person. I'm a hippo, and these are hippos, and this is how we interact, and this is what life is like for us. And thankfully, she's so smart. I mean, she just picked up on it, and she's got kind of a laid-back, easy personality. So she went with the flow, and she's like, all right, I guess this is my world now, and seemed to do just fine with the transition.
Mm-hmm. So because I got so excited about these questions, lost the plot a little bit of some of the questions about her day. You say that she becomes typically, especially when she's outside, more active in the afternoons. Mm-hmm. Does that continue, or does she go back to sleep at some point before night activity?
As she gets older and older, she can hang longer and longer. So she and Bibi will play from roughly 2 p.m. till about 6 or 7 o'clock at night, when the keeper staff then bring them inside for the night and give them their last feeding of the day. But then when we check the cameras from overnight, she and Bibi will be in those indoor pools just swimming and having more fun and playing. Typically, hippos are kind of relaxing for 16 hours out of the day.
Wow.
So here, I think here in the zoo world, yeah, I'd say that she's active for maybe roughly 8 hours every day or so, kind of doing her thing or grazing. We try to simulate what their experience would be in the wild here as best we can in the zoo. So we might scatter feed or throw grain out for them several times a day, or we give them hay several times a day that they have to kind of forage around and eat. So we try to keep them busy on that end. But she's real happy napping for most of the day.
That does seem like that must be an important part of a different kind of enforcement to sort of give them an activity, looking around for food, things like that. Is that something that you all have to think about in terms of letting a hippo be a hippo?
Yeah, definitely. So there's elements of a hippo's life that exist and happen out in the wild that it's much, much harder for us to recreate in a zoo setting. Mm-hmm. But it's something that zookeepers are very conscious of, and we make very conscious efforts to try and simulate that and give them as many of those opportunities as possible. Hippos out in the wild, they might have to trek as far as 6 miles in a single night just to find the food that they need. Mm. And people hear that and they're like, oh, that's heartbreaking. Our hippos never get to trek 6 miles in a night. But I think it's important to remember, too, that the reason that hippos might be doing that in the wild is because they have no choice. Mm-hmm. So if your nearest food source is 6 miles away from the watering hole that you live in, then you got to trek 6 miles out there. I always tell people, like, you don't necessarily go across the state to go grocery shopping,
right,
because you have another option that's much closer. So typically what happens in the zoo world is that, if anything, animals get a little on the hefty side because life is so easy and they have top-of-the-line nutrition and they don't have to work as hard to acquire it. So if anything, yeah, we have to make pretty conscious efforts to make sure that they're getting a fair amount of exercise every day. And lucky for us, with Fiona being as young as she is, she's fairly active and playful and kind of curious and excited about her world anyway. So she does a lot of engaging with Bibi in that play behavior and getting her exercise and activity in, which is great for Bibi as well. But yeah, we make very, very concentrated efforts on our part to try to simulate as closely as we can what they would be doing in the wild, and try to give them that here in the zoo world.
Part of her role, you know, if we talk about her as an ambassador of the zoo, as an ambassador of her species, part of her role is in pulling visitors toward other forms of education, learning, and possibly even, as you suggested, environmental action, maybe conservation work. That's obviously not something she can do herself. But how – and I know it's also a question of marketing, but how do – you and the Cincinnati Zoo and Botanical Garden more generally try to ensure that people aren't just thrilling in an adorable hippo, which is valuable, of course, and delightful, but also maybe are working to develop other kinds of knowledge?
Yeah, that's a great question. And it's probably one of the funner elements of our job. And our marketing team does such a great job of looking for, like, if we send them a video clip of Fiona doing something adorable, like one day she might just be napping on land, there's nothing terribly exciting about that, but we can also point out the fact that, like, oh, she's also producing blood sweat right now. And so we try to tie in whatever she's doing with, like, here's some information about that, and isn't that fascinating about hippos? And then hopefully you start building, like, the care component too. So it's like, we bring her in with the fact that she's cute and adorable and her shenanigans are entertaining, but while you're here, wait till you hear this information. Like, hippos produce this mucus all over their body called blood sweat. And it's actually incredible because it has antiseptic properties and it also serves as a sunscreen. So when they're out of the water, that they don't bake or their skin doesn't crack or dry out in the sun. And by the way, hippos are really reliant on water for survival. So they're really affected by things like climate change. Like a drought in Africa could wipe out an entire bloat of hippos in a location. So yeah, it's like, it's just kind of tying in what's happening with, by the way, this is happening for a reason. Mm-hmm. And with hippos, they're so interesting. There's so many fascinating things about this animal anyway, we could just talk for days and days about. And I think people always kind of walk away going, oh, that is weird. That's different. I didn't know that. And a lot of it's kind of sticky information. Like one of this one I go back to over and over again. So hippos are so dense that they can't float in water. They sink like a rock. But they also choose to spend 2/3 of their life in the water, but they also have to breathe air, which is just a terrifying combination to me. Like if I sunk in the water but had to breathe air, I'd probably never get near the water. Hmm. But hippos are so adapted for it and they survive just fine. And they even have a reflex where if they're napping in the water, without even waking up, they just involuntarily bring their head to the surface to breathe and then lower it back down under the water. Hmm. It's like the more you learn about them, the more fascinating they are. And hopefully people see that and recognize that this is a species worth preserving, and it takes all of us. It takes a collective effort from everybody doing their part and being conscious about how our decisions affect the environment.
It does seem there, too, that the story of Fiona, the collaboration that you and so many others at the zoo participated in to save her life becomes almost a kind of metaphor for that collective work that has to happen. So her story may resonate in other ways, in human ways, that aren't just about how adorable she is, though.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. It's conservation work takes a group effort and it spans continents, and it takes and above all other things, empathy, like understanding that the people who live in Africa with these species face very real dangers and trials and tribulations that we can't relate to at all. I mean, over here in America, if you see a black bear in a neighborhood, that's national news. Everybody hears about it. But in Africa, people live with lions in their backyard and they live with hippos in their backyard. And it's incredible. And it's totally understandable why we have all these conflicts and challenges with trying to convince people like, no, we value this species. We who live an ocean away and don't have to live with them in our backyard, we value them and you should too. And it takes a collective effort and it takes empathy and understanding. And that's one of the cool things about the Cincinnati Zoo. We're very involved on both ends. Like we're talking the talk, but we also walk the walk. And one fascinating thing, when you do some research, there aren't really that many conservation efforts that are dedicated to hippos. As cool as they are and as charismatic as they are, they're not like elephants or cheetahs where there's all these dedicated programs and people who are spending their lives researching them and focusing on their conservation. It's actually kind of hard to find a good conservation effort that you can donate money to and trust that it's going to help hippos specifically. So they're actually a species that's fairly underrepresented when you start talking about conservation on a global scale. But hopefully Fiona can help turn that around. And the more people she brings over to loving hippos and kind of understanding them and valuing them, hopefully we'll see a change in that.
Yeah. Is there any chance that she'll contribute to scientific research efforts into hippos as well? Does she have a role to play there?
Yeah, I think so. We learned so much information just in hand-raising Fiona. And it started super early on, even with milking Bibi, because Bibi had already been trained for those voluntary ultrasound behaviors, where Bibi was comfortable with us kind of reaching underneath of her and touching her belly and her abdomen. We were also fortunate enough that she allowed us to milk her when Fiona was born and when Fiona couldn't nurse on her own. We reached back there and milked a hippo, which is crazy. And we collected some of that milk, and most of it went to Fiona because that was the primary purpose, and she was most in need of it. But we also sent some to the Smithsonian's National Zoo's milk repository, and they analyzed it. And, you know, they told us all about the protein and the fat and the sugars that are found in hippo milk. And so now that's a whole big chunk of information that we didn't have before that we now have for hippos. We also know that hippos are capable now of surviving even as early as 29 pounds and 6 weeks premature. So if this happens again, either if it's in the wild and it's an orphanage out there trying to raise a baby hippo, We've got a whole bunch of information now, a whole lot of do's and don'ts that we learned from our trials with Fiona. So yeah, she's making waves, I'd say. We learned so much about her just in hand raising her and taking care of her those first few months while we had to. So yeah, she's already made a big contribution to her species.
To me, as someone who cares a lot about animals, it's always really fascinating to hear about that element of an animal's maybe accidental working life, if I may, in that they may have complex and other roles to play that aren't always immediately apparent to even the people like me who love them. In terms of what they teach us about their species and how we might care for them better in
the
future.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a really cool ripple effect that happens. And it might be 2, 3, 5, 10 years down the road where we're still seeing results from Fiona's story, hopefully impacting hippos in the wild.
Mm-hmm. Does she ever surprise you? You've spent more than a year watching her grow, watching her begin to thrive. But are there ever things that she does at this point that just make you gasp?
She's still, to this day, I am still just in awe of how smart she is. Just working on her training, just the basic behaviors that we've started working with her on, these certain behaviors that might take another animal months and months and months to learn or to pick up on, Fiona seems to pick up on them in days. She really is just the smartest little cookie. And she's food motivated and willing to kind of work for it and learn. So she does make me kind of like, I have to look at her and be like, you are incredible, little hippo. You're doing some amazing stuff. And then every one of these like kind of personal little moments that you get to see other guests interacting with her at the glass or taking a selfie, all those kinds of things. It's really cool watching people walk away after they've had an experience with her and seeing their faces light up and knowing like, oh, it's all worth it. That right there, that's why Fiona's here. That's why we're here. That's why this zoo exists. And that's, the kind of work that's happening at accredited zoos all over the world every single day. So Fiona's is just one of so many stories out there that are probably very similar.
If people want to learn more about Fiona and her life, what are the best places for them to look? Where should they go?
There's actually a Fiona show on Facebook. So we actually did full-blown episodes, a whole entire first season kind of chronicling and talking about her life. And there's even a season 2 in the works that we're adding new, never-before-seen footage and information. So you can start there. And there's also blogs. We wrote quite a bit of blogs throughout her life as well. And that goes into some of the more in-depth, detailed information that doesn't necessarily get captured or explained during the videos and the photograph posts. And then there's also lots of other great information. San Diego Zoo Global, their website has tons of great info on hippos as well. Just kind of surfing around the internet, checking out our website, other websites that are good and accredited, all kinds of good information out there.
Well, thank you so much for joining us to talk about Fiona's truly unique and definitely adorable job, such as it is today.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this episode of Working. I'm Jacob Rogan. This week, we want to recommend that you check out El Gabfest en Español. It's Slate's first Spanish language podcast, led by award-winning Mexican journalist, broadcaster, and writer León Krause. The hosts, all leading Spanish language journalists, discuss the news of the week in a no-holds-barred lucha libre. They focus on U.S. politics and current events, but they also take on institutional news as well as sports and culture. Every week, they have a news-making guest. Recent invites include journalist Jorge Ramos, chef Jose Andres, whose restaurants are really good, a lot of them here in D.C., and Senator Tim Kaine, whose Spanish is apparently wonderfully fluent. And for Slate Plus members, there's an English language segment so that non-Spanish speakers can hear at least some of the panelists' thoughts. Check out El Gabfest en Español every Thursday morning. Here at Working, we love hearing from you. You're always welcome to, encouraged even to, email us via working@slate.com. You can also hit me up on Twitter. I'm just Jacob_Brogan. Or check out what cute animals I meet on Instagram. Mostly, I take pictures of food, so that may not be for you. Working is produced and edited by Benjamin Frisch.